It's now time for the Fantasy 411 Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Fantasy 411 Podcast at MLB.com. I'm your host, Dylan Higgins, joined by my co-host, Fred Zinke. Fred, how are you doing today?
Well, I'm terrific. There's a lot to talk about this week, and that's always a good thing.
Yeah. I was saying that at first I wasn't sure if there was that much big news, and we started looking up topics, and I was like, oh no, we have plenty to talk about. There's always a lot going on, and we're on Wednesday the 26th of August is when we're recording, but this will come out tomorrow on Thursday, and so we're right up to about the September roster expansion deadline, and so it feels like we're right on the eve of a lot of stuff to happen, but nothing huge right now, yeah?
Yeah, I think, you know, there will be some call-ups in September. I don't know if there'll be, you know, Corey Seager will be up, I'm sure, and some other players, but I don't know if there'll be anything as meaningful as we see in some other years, because a lot of the top young players are already up.
Mm-hmm. Well, so we're recording once a week, so we're going to look back a little bit over the last week, and I think the biggest news we had that seems a little bit of a distant memory, but we recorded before Mike Fiers threw his no-hitter for Houston, which was really impressive. That was on the 21st. It was against the Dodgers, who hit righties pretty well. He walked 3, struck out 10, 134 pitches is kind of the big stat line for me to take away from it. What do you get from this fantasy-wise from him throwing a no-hitter? Obviously, his stock goes up at least a little bit, but what do you take away from Mike Fiers here?
Yeah, I'm going to say not much, and for me, his stock doesn't. Maybe anything positive from the terrific performance is offset by him throwing 134 pitches. That could make you a little wary of him for the next few starts. Mm-hmm. I guess a good thing, he solidified his spot in the Astros rotation, and they're using 6 starters right now. But I mean, with a stud like Dallas Keuchel on the staff and a good pitcher like Scott Kazmir, that might only last for so long if they start to get challenged by the Rangers or someone. So, I mean, at least they're not going to push him out of the rotation after throwing a no-hitter.
Yeah, and he's always been a interesting fantasy player just because he has plenty of strikeouts all the time. Even when his ERA and his WHIP are far from elite, he's going to strike people out. So, Mike Fiers is still pretty well useful in every format. Nothing really changes. You know, his value maybe went up a little bit, but it should be the same guy. But, yeah, congratulations to him, and that was really fun to watch. The other fantasy news we got coming out, Hanley Ramirez is talking about moving to first base in Boston, which on paper, when you look at the depth chart, just made a lot of sense with Mike Napoli out of town, and they had Travis Shaw playing there, who is talented and interesting, but they have Hanley on this long-term contract. They got to put him somewhere. They got to credit outfield. What does this do for you fantasy-wise? Again, that's always our takeaway here at the podcast. What's going on with Hanley moving to first base? What are you thinking going forward?
Yeah, I don't think a big impact maybe on Hanley's value, since he was not going to be shortstop eligible next season anyways, and outfield or first base doesn't matter too much. Maybe it could be seen as a positive sign because he could have a better chance of staying off the disabled list, or more in his case, staying away from those nagging injuries that he seems to get where he's just consistently day to day. So could be a good thing for his value. Maybe a little bit of a bad thing, assuming David Ortiz is back, a bit of a bad thing for Pablo Sandoval's value, because it takes away his opportunity to potentially ever move over to the other side of the diamond. But, and I mean, it affects the young outfielders in Boston. Yeah. You know, now there's room for all of Rusney Castillo, Mookie Betts, and Jackie Bradley Jr. But I think, you know, they just got a new general manager. We've got a whole offseason in front of us. It would be really, really speculative to say that those will definitely be the 3 starting outfielders. We don't really know what direction Dombrowski's going to take Boston in the offseason.
They're going to be a really interesting club. I think people are excited because they have not only a bunch of young talent on the team, they have a lot of expensive contracts that are, some of them are new, and they also have a huge farm system that's just stacked right now. So there could be a lot of moving and shaking going on in Boston, and so right now we can try and pretend like we know what the starting lineup's going to look like next year, and we have a good idea, but that could change a lot. The big takeaway here is not so much Hanley's value changing, but those 3 outfielders right now should get full playing time, potentially, or especially next year. You're talking about Rusney Castillo, Mookie Betts, and maybe Jackie Bradley Jr. is getting that look. He's been playing a little bit better lately. I'll be honest, I'm not personally sold yet, but some people are high on him. Do you have your eye on Jackie Bradley, at least down the stretch, if not next year?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm not really sold on Jackie Bradley Jr. yet. I'd pick him up in a 15-team league right now because he has been hitting well, but this is a long track record of not being a special offensive player, and who knows what they'll do with him for 2016. I mean, a lot could depend on how he does over these last few weeks of the season.
Mm-hmm. To me, I've always felt like his ceiling, if he got 600, 700 at-bats at the bottom of the Boston order playing center field every day, that's the best-case scenario. maybe 10 homers, maybe 10 steals, 75 runs. Like, and that's useful in AL only, but to me, I felt like that was his ceiling. Maybe he'd run a bit more, but there's just not huge potential there at the plate. And so, yeah, he's been a little bit better lately, but I don't know what people expect him to be, even if he does get full-time at-bats, and that's not guaranteed. So keep your eye on him in AL only formats. I'm not sold in mixed leagues, but a player to watch in an interesting outfield and just an interesting club headed down the stretch. And especially in this winter, I feel like a lot can go on for sure. I wanted to talk about D. Gordon, who stole 4 bases on Tuesday. That matched his career high. He's done that twice before. That's always impressive. He ran wild on the Pirates and on Charlie Morton. People keep talking about he has a chance to catch Billy Hamilton. He has 45 steals on the year. Billy Hamilton is 54, had a good lead most of the year, but Billy Hamilton's now hurt. Not that it matters too much. It's just kind of an interesting thing. Do you think D. Gordon can catch Billy Hamilton down the past month?
Yeah, I mean, he definitely could, and I'm sure that if he gets close enough to where he can, you know, he can smell that title, he's going to be running aggressively. To me, the big takeaway with him with so many steals again for a second year in a row is, you know, where is he among the top fantasy first basemen? And, you know, I mean, maybe he's not right there yet with Jose Altuve, but if he steals 55-plus bases mm-hmm. this season, you know, he's at least in, he's for sure in the top 5 in a yeah. Roto League, and could even be a little higher than that. And, you know, what I like about D. Gordon is he plays that premium position that Hamilton yeah. doesn't, you know. And if you can get Gordon fairly early in a 2016 draft, you really have steals, you know, pretty well locked up where you can just dabble with some, you know, 15 and 20 steal guys the rest of the way and be really well set through it the rest of your draft.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I wasn't big on D. Gordon this year. He had that huge year last year, and I was like, yeah, but I don't think he hits that well. I think he's a 260 hitter. I wasn't in on him, and he's proven me wrong. He's still hitting well over 300, still running like crazy, and he's been doing well. And after 2 strong years like that, you're right. You got to start saying, all right, this is a top 5 guy. And again, you're right. Second base makes such a difference because if you have Billy Hamilton in the outfield, you're usually able to find some power in the outfield, so you're kind of replacing the power you get there. At second base, maybe you're not getting that many homers anyway, and by getting all your speed from that position, you can load up on power in places where it's easier to find it. To me, that's, you know, I love getting all that speed from second base. That's a big difference to me. And would you guess where he might get drafted next year? Right now, where does D. Gordon go in fantasy drafts for 2016?
I'd say maybe top 50.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, like around that 50 mark or so, there'll be enough. There's always some owners in every draft who say they'll just chase speed in the final rounds and on waivers and mm-hmm. won't want to invest in the likes of D. Gordon. But I, like
Guilty.
You were saying,
yeah, I'm one of those.
Yeah, getting that speed from, I like to get a D. Gordon early, especially in the middle infield spot. I was a big proponent of getting Jose Altuve this year. Same kind of philosophy. Get a guy who can hit for average and steal bases early in your draft and then build around him because you can load up then on power hitters at other positions knowing you have your steals locked in.
Yeah, those speed only guys kind of change your draft, this kind of thing. And it might be a little easier in auctions because you can curtail your team to build around it. You're kind of pigeonholing yourself with it's Billy Hamilton or a few years ago it was Michael Bourne. Once you do that, you know you have to go with power other places, but maybe in an auction you have a little more flexibility. You kind of go with the team strategy when you get them, but they can be used definitely very effectively to build a real balanced roster. So yeah, stock up on D. Gordon. We're excited about that. I want to talk about 2 rookies that have been red hot lately too. All eyes are on Kyle Schwarber in Chicago. A lot of people watching the Cubs. Looks like they have a good chance of challenging to at least make the wild card and maybe play some more extra baseball in October. And Kyle Schwarber is getting a lot of credit for helping turn around this offense. They were struggling against righties a month or two ago, and all of a sudden he came up and he is not disappointed in any way with the bat. 12 homers and 35 RBIs in 42 games. Really impressive. Do you have anything to take away from Kyle Schwarber to start?
I think he's, you know, already a top 3 fantasy catcher, and I know that he strikes out a lot, but it worked for him in the minors. Mm-hmm. You know, it works for him. It's worked for him so far in the majors. Obviously, Buster Posey is still head of the class at that position. I personally really like Brian McCann. I feel like McCann's a really safe source of mm-hmm. close to 30 home runs, and he's going to probably top 90 RBIs, you know, hitting in the middle of that good Yankees lineup. Maybe I would prefer Schwarber over McCann by next season. We'll see how he finishes this year, but I mean, it's really remarkable that a player, it does say something about the lack of talent, offensive talent, the catcher position, but that a rookie can come up in the summer and, you know, we haven't even hit September yet, and we're already talking about him being a top option.
Yeah. and he might not stick at catcher, but he'll get enough reps back there to should have his eligibility, and he's striking out a ton, and that's fine. I think he might be a 250, 260 hitter when that BABIP comes down. That's okay, though, when you're hitting home runs like this. And I wanted to bring him up alongside Miguel Sano, who also hasn't disappointed since coming up. Everybody knew he had 40 homer potential, but he might hit 240 and strike out a ton. Really kind of similar players, and their stat lines so far are really similar. Sano also has 12 homers. He has 37 RBIs in 45 games. So just on those few stats, those fantasy stats, they've been real close. Miguel Sano DHing for the Twins mostly, but should be third base eligible probably. Same kind of thing, right? You got to be pretty excited about Sano going into the next year.
Yeah, what I like with Sano beyond the power is the patience, and his walk rate as a rookie is really high. So it's not like he's just coming up and hacking, and you know what? When he doesn't really run into one, then he strikes out. I mean, he's getting a lot of walks. What I don't like about Sano is I think the odds are pretty high that next season he's going to start the year as utility only. In a lot of fantasy leagues, he'll probably build that third base eligibility or maybe who knows if they'll have him work at first at some point or something. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like we talked about the Red Sox, long off season, things can change. But, you know, that's obviously makes a massive difference. If you're projecting Schwarber and Sano with anywhere near the same numbers next season, then Schwarber's obviously way more valuable because he can be used as a catcher.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised how close they were stat-wise in a vacuum, and they are relatively similar players. I think Sano has a bit more power, but the truth is they just both play and can hit, and I'm all in on both of them, even if they regress a little bit. And you got to expect them to not hit at this pace. They're not going to be MVPs next year necessarily, but they're going to hit, and they're going to hit with power. So I am in for sure. And then we wanted to talk about Carlos Rodon heating up a little bit. He has plenty of potential, another one of these young guys with a ton of skills. He came up, he's striking everybody out, but he's also walking everybody. But he's kind of turned it around a little bit. He allowed 8 runs on July 31st. That was kind of a disaster. But in his 4 August starts since, just a 2.36 ERA, allowing a 6.50 OPS, 27 strikeouts in almost that many innings. What are you feeling about Carlos Rodon here as we head towards September?
Yeah, I mean, maybe casual fantasy owners won't realize that Carlos Rodon is considered to have, you know, massive, massive upside. Like, you hear the words Chris Sale sometimes thrown around when people talk. And I know it's convenient because they're both left-handers and they're on the same team. But, I mean, you hear that kind of potential for him, like for Dynasty League owners. So, I mean, it makes sense that at some point the light's going to come on. And, you know, the control is going to improve. And I'm not saying we're totally through the looking glass on this right now, but this is a really encouraging sign. If this was just a marginal prospect who's had a few good starts, you'd say, okay, pick him up and use him until the wheels fall off at some point. But with Rodon, you know, they might not. And I mean, this is an encouraging sign that maybe next season he's ready to take the big step forward because the strikeout rate is really high and he can limit hits. It's just avoiding those free passes that get him into trouble. Once he's ready to do that, like, the sky's the limit for this guy.
And this is a third overall pick in 2014. Like, he has huge pedigree, huge stuff, and I think you're with me. You don't necessarily think that he's a lock next year to be great, but the truth is the ceiling's so high, you have to take the chance. Because he could absolutely break out, and again, not sure he's going to be Chris Sale, but he could be is there a chance he can be a top 10 pitcher next year?
I think that's probably pretty generous, but, you know, maybe he could be top 25 or something. Like, he'll probably still have some control issues next year, but, you know, top 25 or something would be amazing. Like, when you start thinking second half of a mixed league draft and where there's so much depth in pitching, like, you can use it where you can take him and then fill your bench with some more reliable but lower upside arms where you can say, hey, I'm going to, you know, feel Rodon out here in April. And if he looks good, then I'm going to roll them. And if he doesn't, you know what, then it's a wasted draft pick. But the upside's so tremendous that it's worth it.
Yeah, I don't think he's necessarily going to be good. I'm not rushing out to get him in all my leagues. But definitely if he's sitting there, depending on where the draft is, has a chance to change your league. You know, sometimes you take a chance on those guys and all of a sudden that puts you in first place. All of a sudden if you have an unexpected ace or a huge guy. So eyes are on Rodon. Same with just down the stretch, not even in drafts next year. But for September, they're going to definitely keep trotting him out there, I assume. I don't know about any necessary innings limits, but as long as he's pitching, has this upside to help you out, not only in your roto leagues as you chase those stats, but especially in head-to-head where one or two big starts in your week could do a big, big help for you towards the championship. Would you agree?
Yeah, totally, definitely. He's someone to pick up, especially if you're, if you're in a position where you need to make a run, you know, if you're in a shallower league and you need to make a run to catch somebody to win your league, this is the kind of guy who could go out and throw six shutout innings with 10 strikeouts. So, you know, go for it. And if it doesn't work out, hey, you probably weren't going to catch first anyway. So, yeah, go for it with him.
Good Hail Mary option, I feel like. He has crazy upside. And then another discussion that's been coming up lately is Josh Donaldson reached the century mark in RBIs. And that immediately sparks the MVP discussion, even though it's still only August. And everybody kind of assumed it was going to be Trout's award, and now Josh Donaldson's, you know, pushing for that. And we're not really that kind of podcast. We don't have to get into that too deeply in terms of RBIs and MVP and whatnot. But we will talk about fantasy MVP and where RBIs are definitely a thing and very important. And Josh Donaldson has just been an absolute fantasy monster all year. He's hitting an even 300, 34 home runs, 100 RBIs, 95 runs, 4 stolen bases he chipped in, which is just a bonus. Trout's hitting 297 right there with him. What about, I realize this is super premature. Again, it's the end of August. Do you have a fantasy MVP right now, and is Josh Donaldson in your top two or three?
He's in there, but to be honest, I think fantasy MVP is Paul Goldschmidt, and to be honest, I don't think it's really that close. I mean, he's hitting 330, which really leaves Trout and Donaldson far behind. You know, a few less home runs than those players, but he's got 20 steals, which is just terrific from a first baseman. His RBIs, his runs scored are high. To me, Goldschmidt's the MVP with the across-the-board production, and then, you know, Donaldson and Trout falling behind him. And if you want to look forward, I think something that we've been talking about, you know, around our fantasy department, and, you know, we'll probably put out some content about this in September, is looking forward to 2016 drafts. Is Mike Trout still the number one pick? Because he was the number one pick in almost every 2015 draft. I think Goldschmidt's probably the number one pick for 2016. Yeah. He doesn't have to be, but, and if Trout's not number one, is Trout a lock for number two? And I mean, I'm not going to argue with anyone who takes Trout number two.
Yeah.
But if the Blue Jays don't break up the band, like, why would you turn away from Josh Donaldson next season if he's capable of hitting 40-plus home runs, hitting behind Tulowitzki, ahead of Bautista and Encarnacion in the Rogers Center?
Just an insane lineup and spot.
And you can make an argument that Harper's, you know, been as good as Trout this year. He certainly is young. He certainly has as much potential. If Stanton will be back next year, his home run pace was ridiculous before he got hurt. I mean, if you're someone who believes he could hit 50 homers next year, and then there's always Kershaw. Like, is it possible that Trout could fall to the fourth or fifth pick in some drafts, which I think going into this season we thought was just totally impossible at his age, his skill set. And he hasn't even done poorly.
Unless he had like a major injury or something, you know. But he hasn't been disappointing this year at all.
No, but he has stopped running, and that's a key factor with him. What you thought you'd get from him, you know, was the 35 homers, but, you know, he had 20 or 25 steals, and he has 10 steals, and I think he got 6 in April. So he's basically just completely – since the end of April, he's no better at stealing bases than Josh Donaldson.
Yeah.
So he's lost that edge that he had. You know, if the Angels don't really improve the lineup around him, which isn't that strong, it's really interesting. I didn't think we'd be at this point with Trout. But we are, and some of it's to do with him, and some of it's to do with just the situation around him.
And you mentioned Paul Goldschmidt stole 20 bases. That's great for a first baseman. Let's be honest, that's just great for any player. Like, it blows it away for first baseman. 20 stolen bases, or not even to September. That's awesome. That's a huge bump. That's, you know, what you're hoping to get from McCutchen or Trout. Trout only has 10. Like, what would you have given me odds-wise if I would have bet you that Goldschmidt had twice as many stolen bases as Trout in a full healthy season? That's amazing, and I think you're right. That gives him fantasy MVP edge. But talking about real cream of the crop there, and might be a first overall pick next year also. Also, we can't ignore Bryce Harper hitting 329 with 31 homers, only 74 RBIs, and he's only stolen 5 bases. But he's going to be right there in that top 5 too, especially as people assume he has the chance to keep growing. So, that's not the regular MVP debate, but that's not what we do here. We're going to talk about these fantasy MVPs, and that's kind of an unofficial race going down to the wire, which is really interesting for sure. And then, of course, we got to get to some bullpens. There's always bullpen news, especially late in the season like this, and things are still shaking up. Seattle bullpen has suddenly become a mess. You and I were trying to figure it out for the closer report, which we run over at MLB.com/fantasy. We bring it up every week because it's actually a really good resource for figuring out what's going on, especially when things are such a mess. Seattle finally let Fernando Rodney go. He's gone. He was already clinging to that job just barely, and he's now not on the roster. And you'd think it would be Carson Smith's job who he was fighting with. Now they're giving saves to Tom Wilhelmsen. And it just seems like kind of a mess of a bullpen. And even past Carson Smith and Wilhelmsson, there are not very many good options in Seattle. What do you have to take away from what's going on in that bullpen?
Yeah, I mean, Wilhelmsson clearly seems to be the guy. Twice in the past week, he's picked up a save while Carson Smith pitched an earlier inning. So that seems to be Lloyd McClendon's preference right now. And, you know, the old saying, saves are saves. And I think early in the season, that's not totally true. Saves are saves, but guys who really don't pitch well are going to eventually ruin your team. You're going to get 5-10 saves out of them, and then they're going to blow up your ERA and whip. But this late in the season, definitely saves are saves. And maybe Tom Wilhelmsson isn't a guy who can hold a closer role for 6 months, but he could hold it for 1 month. And why not? I mean, there's a chance that Tom Wilhelmsson gets more saves than, you know, Trevor Rosenthal or Mark Melancon in September. I mean, it's not likely, but it's why not? Seattle can play close games. It can happen. He's a guy I pick up. You know, we talked about the Boston bullpen last week, and it's still a mess, and I would avoid everything there.
Yeah, it's they keep trying to give opportunities to Junichi Tsusawa, and he just keeps blowing them, which is weird because he's usually an okay reliever, but not getting it done. But the other options aren't good either.
For sure. So I think you just avoid that. If you're desperate, I think Wilhelmsson's the guy to target. Even compared to, say, Sean Doolittle in Oakland is back. He hasn't looked great since he's been back. You know, I think I'd be inclined to just go with Wilhelmsson. I know he's not a terrific pitcher, but he's been pitching okay lately.
Yeah, and he gets his strikeouts. Yeah.
Yeah. Go for it if you need saves.
But you're right. You just got 4 or 5 weeks of hoping they run into saves, and they're pretty hard to predict. They can just happen. Like, it's entirely possible he gets 10 saves in September, which would be nuts, but, like, there's no reason that can't happen. So, yeah, keep an eye on that. That's the place to go for saves right now. You can try and play with Tsusawa, but that's been ugly. And Sean Doolittle has tons of upside, but you're right. This shoulder is kind of scary, and he hasn't really shown that he's okay since he's been back. And then one more player you wanted to talk about, Domingo Santana, is with the Brewers. He went over there in that Carlos Gomez trade, and they're going to give him a look. Has a ton of upside. Kind of a guy to be excited about, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, he's already had some major league growing pains, you know, and some stretches where he didn't hit well. He's going to strike out a lot. His batting average won't be great. The low batting average, I think, keeps him out of shallow mixed leagues. But in 15-team leagues and deeper leagues, he's going to hit some home runs. And this is a guy worth targeting for that. And I will say, even maybe in a 12-team league, if you're not close to other teams in a roto league in batting average, so you have some grace there, either you're at the bottom or you're at the top, or you're in the middle, but there's just a gap there and you need home runs, he's someone to target. I think if I'm thinking from a Brewer standpoint, he was a key part of the Gomez trade. They have space in the outfield right now to play him virtually every day. Why not play the kid until the end of the season and see what you have? And then you go into next season saying, okay, is Santana one of our three starting outfielders? Is he, you know, a fourth outfielder? Does he need more time in the minors? But they might as well get their answer, and fantasy owners can benefit from that.
Yeah, he's still 23 years old. He had an 857 OPS in the minor leagues. He was good at AAA. Has considerable pop, a little bit of speed, strikes out plenty. And to be fair, who doesn't strike out nowadays? But that seems like a volatile player could come up, and if he can control the major league strike zone, he'll be in business and hit a bunch of home runs. And if he can't and he strikes out all day, then it's a pretty low floor. But definitely a guy to keep an eye on, take a flyer on, which is kind of what the Brewers are doing. They want to see what they got. And so I would keep an eye on him as well. Could be a substantial player next year in all fantasy formats, really. Want to talk about some injuries real quick. CeCe Sabathia's right knee is barking again. He might be back in September, might be as a starter, might be as a reliever. Truth is, he had a 5.27 ERA this year, so I don't think that's really sinking any ships in fantasy. But who do you think steps in there if there is a hole in that rotation? Is it Adam Warren, or is there anybody to be excited about at Yankee Stadium?
Well, if they had another hole, you know, Warren would probably be the guy to step in, but they had, for about 24 hours, they were going to a six-man rotation once Pineda came back. Sabathia, you know, kind of conveniently, I'm not saying the injury's not legit, it's totally legit, but the timing worked out well for them in the sense that, you know, he went down with the injury right before Pineda came back. That leaves them back at five, leaves Warren stuck in the bullpen for now. I think if they needed another pitcher, he's probably their guy. But what's nice about it is if you own Luis Severino, you know, if you own Tanaka, if you own Pineda, they're not going to pitch every sixth game in September, and you're which gets you, say, one extra start. And in some close leagues, one extra start means five more strikeouts, means maybe a championship.
Yep, and Nady Evaldi's been good lately, too. And not that any owners were sweating about him, but all signs looking good for him. So, yeah, keep an eye on that Yankees bullpen. Carlos Carrasco of the Indians went to the DL. His shoulder hurts. They say it's going to be minimum stay. You never want to hear shoulder soreness, but especially when they're not in the race, they might be safe with him. But they say he's going to be back in a few weeks. In his place comes Cody Anderson. Cody Anderson started the year hot and then predictably regressed. Where do you feel Cody Anderson is? Somewhere in the middle there, probably?
Yeah, I go, like, totally don't pick up Cody Anderson. Maybe I'll be wrong, but my reasoning is his strikeout rate is so low that his ratios have to be terrific for him to have value to your team. He's almost like a poor man's Jared Weaver.
Right.
And Jared Weaver's kind of a poor man's pitcher on his own right.
Yeah.
And Anderson's even below that. So it's kind of like, what do you hope? You're really risking your ERA and whip with Anderson, and you're not going to get the strikeouts, so now you're just hoping for a win.
Yeah.
You know, I would say I definitely hold Carrasco. The Indians have said that they don't think this is a really big deal. He got a cortisone shot, I believe, yesterday. They're going to shut him down 4 or 5 days. I mean, he shouldn't need a rehab assignment. They probably have him throw a couple bullpen sessions, and he could be back in the rotation by, you know, late next weekend, you know, late next week or into next weekend, or maybe the week after that, but you could still get, you know, say 3-4 weeks of production of him, and he's been terrific this summer.
Yeah, so gotta hold on to him. Should be fine. We're crossing our fingers. Carlos Gonzalez was out with a knee issue. He entered the lineup again on Wednesday. Supposedly seems fine. Just always something with Carlos Gonzalez, but the truth is he's on fire and he's producing, and until he hits the DL, you just gotta kinda keep an eye on his day-to-day status and keep playing him, right?
Yeah, I mean, you've already gotten more out of Cargo than you probably hoped for.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fact that he's day-to-day now isn't a big surprise. The fact that he's not on the DL is terrific for his owners.
Yep. They gotta think he must be okay because they put him in. So there he is, playing on Wednesday, but keep an eye on it. Jorge Soler, however, not okay. He hit the DL with an oblique issue. You got less out of Jorge Soler this year than you expected, probably, if you drafted him. Young guy, good slugger, has a lot of potential, but was having trouble this year. He's out, what I read, at least 3 weeks. What are your concerns there with Jorge Soler? Are you dropping him in standard leagues, probably?
Yeah, I'm going to drop him in probably virtually every mixed league. If I had a deep mixed league with DL spots, sure, I'll keep him. But, yeah, I'm dropping him in most leagues. I'm not down on his long-term potential. I still think he can be a really productive hitter, maybe as soon as next season, and definitely when he reaches his prime. But, I mean, there's about 5 weeks left. He's going to be out 3 or 4 of them. He hasn't played well enough for you to wait. You know, you can sit on studs like Carlos Carrasco and hope for, you know, 3 or 4 good starts. You don't need to sit on Soler and hope for 10 good games at the end of the season because you probably aren't going to get them.
Yep. And then is there any impact in the Cubs outfield from this that really gets your interest?
Well, the impact maybe is actually at second base because Chris Coughlin might go out to the outfield. You know, he was in at second base. Then that frees up second base. Tommy La Stella's there now. Maybe Starlin Castro plays some second base. And maybe once rosters expand, you see Javier Baez there at some point. They probably mix and match enough to take the mixed league value away from all of those second base types. And maybe Coughlin still plays sometimes at second. But, it probably is just more of a mess now with Soler gone.
Yeah, nothing real obvious there, but stuff to keep an eye on, but nothing to run out and grab. How about Lucas Duda? He's out with back issues. The Mets say he'll be back when he's eligible on September 6th. I think we've all become a little jaded on trusting the Mets' medical reports, but if he comes back, obviously he's shown pretty good power, can make a difference in just about every league. You just gotta hold on to Duda and hope he comes back quick, right?
Yeah, and I mean, what's nice about it is he'll be joining a Mets lineup that's, you know, really raking right now. The worst thing for Lucas Duda owners is you had him for almost the whole season with a pretty lackluster Mets lineup through, you know, right up until they got Cespedes at the trade deadline. Right when he became injured, they went into Colorado, scored a ton of runs, went into Philadelphia, scored a ton of runs. They get David Wright back, you know, and if you own Duda and he was healthy right now, you'd have him right in the heart of that lineup.
Mm-hmm.
He'd be collecting RBIs and runs by accident right now.
Yeah.
When he comes back, he should go back, he should go right into mixed league lineups. If he's going to hit right around Wright and Cespedes, like, this is all of a sudden a pretty solid lineup.
Yep, getting ready for this stretch run. And Kind of a messy infield, though. A lot of guys that have talent that aren't necessarily playing every day. You got David Wright, who might not play every day. Kelly Johnson's useful when he's in. Juan Uribe is good when he's in against lefties. They already had kind of a platoon, or at least a mess at shortstop between a couple players. And then Daniel Murphy's floating around, too. It's a crowded infield. That said, there's no way Lucas Duda loses his job. He's going to come in and he's going to produce. But kind of a pain with some of these other guys. But the truth is they have too much talent. It's a good problem to have, kind of like what's going on in Pittsburgh. And then your Blue Jays firing on all cylinders, looking real good. But not good news for Devin Travis, who may be out this season for a left shoulder injury. You got any news on that?
Yeah, he's young and optimistic and hopes he can come back. The club doesn't sound very optimistic that he's going to get back. I'd say he's a for sure drop in all leagues. If he does get back, they're probably aiming more postseason or final week of the season to get him tuned up for the postseason. They don't really have a problem with having Ryan Goins at second base, to be honest. Goins is an outstanding defender, and the rest of the lineup is so good around him that they can live with Goins batting eighth or so in the lineup. They mix in Cliff Pennington. I think that acquisition maybe said something about how they feel about Travis's ability to get back in the lineup this season. So go ahead and drop him.
Drop him, and Goins and Pennington are not interesting, really, unless you're in a real deep format where you just want somebody with a pulse in that Blue Jays lineup. But there's not a lot of upside from either of them. And then more exciting news, Giancarlo Stanton, you mentioned earlier, should be maybe coming back pretty soon. He says might be another week or so. And then immediately just, you know, a top talent in all formats, right?
Yeah, absolutely. He goes straight back into lineups. And actually, you touched on something earlier that I think is worth discussing. You know, the Marlins, who are as out of it as a team can be, you know, they're getting him back. And then recently the Marlins have said that they are hoping to have Jose Fernandez back by the middle of September. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned with Carlos Carrasco in the shoulder. And I think fantasy owners, we often think, oh, the team's out of it. They're just going to shut all these guys down and they're not going to bring them back. And sometimes I think we're forgetting the baseball player, the professional athlete mentality. Mm-hmm. You know, these guys love playing baseball. They're competitive guys. They don't want to go into the winter, you know, sitting on the disabled list, not playing if they can avoid it. And, you know, Stanton would love nothing more, I think, than to come back and hit 8 home runs in September and then really go into that offseason on a high. Fernandez would love nothing more than to come back, make 3 or 4 starts, pitch really well, get his confidence back up. You know, same thing for Carlos Carrasco. They don't want these guys, you know, we say you're out of it. Doesn't matter. We see major league teams all the time who are, you know, quote unquote out of it, and their players are going hard right up until the final day of the season, trying to put up stats, trying to prove their worth, trying to prove things to themselves, you know, just being competitors.
Yep. And at the end of the day, it's definitely the organization's decision. But when it comes to guys like that who are definite franchise players, make a huge difference. There's definitely a little bit of politics going on and keeping them happy. And who knows what would happen? We don't really know. It's all guessing, but that's definitely a thing. The Marlins might want to keep them happy and let them get some starts in as well. So, Stanton will be back soon. If you, obviously you held on to him, you should have, and put him right in day one, right?
Absolutely.
Yep. All right. We're going to look at some guys on the waiver wire for you to target. Fred, you write every week a waiver wire targets article. Shows up on MLB.com over at our fantasy page. And try and keep an eye on some guys that are hot and maybe under-owned and could be some helpful producers in the next week or hopefully the next month. And we picked 3 of them to look at. Fred, you start with Odubel Herrera, top of your list coming out of this article. Tell me about Odubel Herrera and what you like about him going forward.
Sure. Well, one thing that's really seemed to happen with him is he's been promoted to those premium lineup spots. So he's getting a lot of work hitting third, hitting second, which is terrific. And he's been using that to his advantage. He's been hitting really well in the past month. His season day-to-day numbers are solid, but really well in the past month. And, you know, the Phillies' offense is a little bit better. Cesar Hernandez has been decent at the top of the lineup. You know, Ryan Howard's not great anymore, but he can get a little bit done. So you put Herrera right in the middle there of that top, you know, half of the lineup. And you got a guy who can steal a few bases, hit the odd home run, hit for a decent average, score some runs. You know, and he's second base eligible in most leagues, so there's a lot to like there.
Yeah, he's a useful player for sure. So we're going to play some Would You Rather with this guy and some guys that I handpicked that I think might be around the same value. We're going to go with some outfielders for Herrera. He has 6 homers, 14 stolen bases. He's hitting .291. Do you like Herrera or do you like Ruzne Castillo?
I think I'd take Castillo. I'm still a little mesmerized by his potential, so I would go with Castillo.
Yeah, Castillo has 5 homers, 3 stolen bases, but only in 160 plate appearances. I hear a lot of people touting Castillo, and I'll be honest, I'm not sold just because he's just a total enigma. Everybody has, you know, projections of what he might do. Truth is, we all have no idea, and that has me down on him, but the truth is, maybe I should be more excited because we just don't know. He's just a giant question mark for me. So I'm fine with that. So far, so good for him. I don't know if he'll keep it up, but he's exciting for sure. Another guy we also don't really know exactly what he is, but could be interesting, is Yasmani Tomas has been not the player that we thought he would be in Arizona, but he has been useful. Do you like him or Odubel Herrera?
I take Herrera for sure. Tomas, you know, he's still hitting .292, but his batting average was much higher than that, you know, 6 weeks ago, and his BABIP was really high, and it's come down, and the batting average has come down, and there's not much power there. I take the hot hand and go with Herrera.
Yeah, he's a guy that has a lot of physical talent, but we haven't seen it really show up in the box score, at least not how we thought. Been more of an average guy than a power guy. Hasn't been terrible, but I think expectations were higher for him. And then another guy with plenty of talent that hasn't quite shown up yet, Avisail Garcia of the White Sox, outfielder, hitting .269 with 11 homers and 6 stolen bases. Do you like him or do you like Herrera?
I take Herrera for sure. When I think about Garcia, and you were mentioning certain players and we don't really know what they are yet, I'm starting to become afraid that we do know what Garcia is and that this is it. And it's just an unimpressive profile. It's a middling batting average. You know, he's going to hit 15 homers, 8 steals. Like, that's not a mixed league outfielder.
Yeah, yeah. Some talent, but it just hasn't shown up yet. He's kind of young. It wouldn't surprise me if he suddenly grew into it, but hasn't yet, you know. So Herrera's been a better contributor so far, and I'm with you there. All right, another guy you have on your list you want to talk about, we mentioned him earlier, Chris Coughlin. Might be at second base, might be in the outfield. Let's talk about him as a middle infielder, though, and try and compare here. What do you like about Chris Coughlin going forward?
Yeah, he's really raised his profile in my eyes by doing two things. One, getting that middle infield eligibility, and two, getting that full-time role. This is someone coming into the season who had never had a 10 home run season. Well, he's already got 15 this year, and he has 11 steals. So you start looking at Coughlin as, if he's a middle infielder who can get close to 20, say, like he might hit 20 home runs and steal 15 bases this year, that's terrific. And the Cubs are batting him third in the lineup a lot recently, right in front of Rizzo. Like if you can get a middle infielder who hits third in front of Rizzo and has some power and speed, that's terrific.
What's not to like, right? And all those numbers coming in just 400 plate appearances. I think he struggles with lefties sometimes, but, you know, a lot of left-handed bats do. You should be fine. So he's only hitting .250, which again isn't that bad either, but there's some value here. He's underrated. Some guys right around that at middle infield. Would you go with Coughlin or do you like Marcus Semien?
I take Coughlin for sure. Semien was productive in April, but not much since.
Yeah. He has 11 home runs. He has 10 stolen bases. That's interesting at shortstop. I think you can use that in mixed leagues, but it's like right at the end. But I agree that Coughlin has some much more upside, much more interesting. Another guy that's, you know, hasn't been as good, but has some more upside. Are you at all high on Jed Jerko, who's been real bad the last year and a half, but showing signs of life and definitely has pop? No speed, but 10 homers and 309 plate appearances. Do you like him or do you like Coughlin?
I take Coughlin. I'm just not a Jed Jerko guy. He kind of maybe falls in the Avisail Garcia category for me, where I want to see it over an extended stretch, and because we haven't seen that from Jerko now going back since 2013. So
yeah.
I want to see it. I know he's had some home runs recently, and that's good. You know, NL only, I'm interested, you know, but mixed league, I think I'm still out. I'd rather just take Coughlin.
Yeah, I think the upside for Jerko, and we've seen it, is, you know, 20 homers, and I think he can do it. There's pop there, but the problem is he has shown that the floor is really low when things are bad. He can hit sub 200, and that'll just sink you. Unless he's hitting 40 homers, and he's not doing that. So I have my eye on him in deeper formats, but you're right. Coughlin's a little more interesting. And then another guy I think compares that middle infield, Brad Miller of Seattle, kind of a shortstop that people have been waiting for to break out with some power and speed, and been some middling numbers, 9 homers, 11 stolen bases so far. Do you like him or do you like Coughlin?
Yeah, I'm still, I Coughlin, you know, way ahead of Brad Miller. Mm-hmm. Brad Miller's, you know, kind of like Marcus Semien to me, where he's fine, he gets a few stats, but he's not hitting in that premium lineup spot like Coughlin is, and he's not hitting really well right now, and that's what you want if you're trying to win your league this season.
He's been a popular sleeper for a lot of people and just hasn't quite lived up to it yet, shown flashes of it, and yeah, I agree. It's kind of like Semien, some power, some speed, you know, shortstop eligibility is nice, but not about to win your league by any means. And then you listed a pitcher, and I thought this one was real interesting and hard to really get a grasp on value-wise, but you like Chris Medlin coming back, joining the Royals rotation. What are you trying to figure out with Chris Medlin as he comes back from his injury?
Yeah, I like Chris Medlin a lot, and you know, I bid heavily on him in every league that I could this past weekend. Mm-hmm. This is a pitcher with terrific career numbers. I know some of those numbers were developed as a reliever, but and I know they were developed in the National League for the most part. But, I mean, we're talking a career ERA under 3, mm-hmm. a whip, I believe, is around 1.15. Like, you don't see guys joining rotations with significant starter experience this time of the season with those kind of career numbers. And now you put them on the Royals. That's the team with the best record in the American League, with the mm-hmm. best defense in baseball, with a shutdown bullpen to close games out if he only throws 6 innings. I mean, he's got everything working in his favor down the stretch. I think he should be owned in every league and active, unless he gives us a reason not to be. Like, he should be active in every league going forward.
Yep, he's only thrown 1 start so far. It went okay, but you're right, there's a lot of upside. And he showed in Atlanta a few years there that he could be a reliable, good starter. So, yeah, you're right, there's upside there, and that could change your September and change your league. So I struggle to find some good comparisons here to put with Medlin, guy coming back from injury that has upside. I don't know that he's on the same level, but we got to discuss Matt Moore. So first of all, you like Medlin more than Matt Moore?
Yeah, for sure.
But Matt Moore came back and he struck out 16 guys at AAA Durham. And that just needs to be discussed because this is a guy who, before his injury, before being called up, he was on those prospect lists with Mike Trout and Bryce Harper. He was sky high potential and he's still young enough that maybe it's there, but he's struggled. Do you like Matt Moore even going into September at all?
Not really. I mean, I'm sure he'll make some starts. I'm not going to pick him up. He's too wild for my liking. I think the interesting thing is, you know, you said 16 strikeouts in AAA. Well, Matt Moore was putting up great numbers in AAA several years ago. So, yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm not. And then he came to the majors and hasn't, you know, been as good as we had hoped. So I want to see it in the majors,
yep.
You know, for a continual period first.
Potential's there, has not proven it, just control problems. How about the opposite of that? A guy that's kind of established himself as a reliable but boring option, Kyle Hendricks, has a 4.03 ERA, 1.22 whip. You know, a good amount of strikeouts, not overwhelming. I see that as a safe option. Do you like that more than Chris Medlin?
No, I think Medlin can beat that 4 ERA, you know, substantially.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe pick up more wins pitching for the Royals.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I know wins are fickle, but.
Yeah. I like Hendricks as a spot start guy. When he has a good matchup, I'm all about it. Like, if Kyle Hendricks is going to Atlanta, you bet I think he can beat him, but it's hard to send him out there every day. That's right around the ownership percentage where I thought was pretty comparable. How about another guy coming back from injury, Patrick Corbin against Chris Medlin? Who would you rather have?
Yeah, it's still Medlin for me by a mile. Corbin's got some potential there, but he's coming back from Tommy John. He's been pretty inconsistent since he came back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it isn't, I think, in as favorable a situation. I really see Medlin, like, I see him all, like, on par with guys, say, like Hector Santiago, who's had mm-hmm. a really good year, but has had some downturn recently. Like, I think Medlin's all the way up at that level of pitcher as soon as he joins the Royals rotation. He's in there with, you know, the maybe Marco Estrada types who have maybe pitched a little over his head this year, but good pitch, solid pitcher this year on a good team. Like, I've got Medlin really high for the stretch run.
I like Medlin. I'm maybe not as high as you, and I like Patrick Corbin, and I like him more than you do, but I still agree. Just even with those little inchings either way, I like Medlin a little more than Corbin. Corbin's peripherals have looked good. They just haven't come out on the page in ERA and whip, but the walks and the strikeouts look all right. One more guy coming back from injury also, Derek Holland. You probably like Chris Medlin more, but what do you think about Derek Holland down the stretch?
Yeah, for Holland, I'm not too excited. He gave up 3 homers. I know it was against the Blue Jays, but he gave up 3 homers last time out. You know, tough ballpark to pitch in. Rangers have one of the worst bullpens in baseball to back him up, so he's not going to get a ton of help. He should get some help from his own lineup, but, I mean, he's got to pitch really well down the stretch to make a difference, and I'm just not – I think 2016, I'm interested. 2015, I think I'd rather try some other players.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to look at some pitchers for the weekend also for Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I'm going to do our pitcher ditch, going to give our thumbs up or our thumbs down, not only for these guys down the stretch run, but also these starts specifically. On Friday, the 28th, you got Aaron Nola is at home against the Padres. Last time Aaron Nola went out, he shut down the Marlins for 8 scoreless innings. What do you think about Aaron Nola this time out getting the Padres at home?
Yeah, I'd pitch him. same thing as, you know, why I would have pitched him against the Marlins. You know, the Padres are one of the worst offenses in the league against right-handers. So, mm-hmm. And he's pitched well enough. I think he deserves the shot.
Yeah, he's shown he can succeed in spot start situations for sure. I am all in there as well. How about Henry Owens going against the red-hot Mets? Last time out, he held Kansas City to one run in 8 innings. And he's a guy that we know has potential if he can straighten things out. This is kind of a tough matchup, surprisingly. Again, red-hot Mets. What do you think about Henry Owens going to New York?
Yeah, deeper mixed leagues, I would pitch him. Shallow leagues, I think I'd avoid. There is that maybe disaster potential. The Mets are hot, and Owens has had some hiccups since he's been in the majors. But, you know, he has shown some really exciting potential. So in deeper mixed, I'd go for it. I mean, he gets a National League lineup. It's mm-hmm. a little easier than what he's been working with since he came up.
It's an okay park. It's on the road, but it's an okay park. And then also on Friday, Kevin Gausman goes to Texas, gets the Rangers. Kevin Gausman's just always been kind of an enigma, has really good potential. I haven't seen the results. He has 3 straight quality starts right now, though. Do you think he can handle the Rangers? Would you trust him there?
No, I wouldn't. Texas is hot. They have a lot of hitters, you know, from Fielder, Moreland, Odor, you know, Shin-Soo Chu. They have a lot of hitters who really do well against right-handers. So yeah. I'm out on that. I know he's pitched well recently. I wouldn't necessarily drop him, but I'm not using him.
Yep, not a great matchup. On to Saturday, the 29th, how about another Texas lefty, Martin Perez, getting Baltimore? Martin Perez allowed 8 innings and 1 run on July 28th. That's a nightmare. That blew up his ERA for the year, basically. But he's had a 2.84 ERA in his 4 starts since. He's kind of calmed things down. Do you like Martin Perez in general and getting Baltimore on Saturday?
No, I'm going to sit him. I feel like he's just too volatile since he came back. For me to use him unless the matchup's really good. And I know Baltimore hasn't been great lately, but they're good enough that I'm going to pass.
Yeah, there's blow potential there. I have my eye on him in better matchups, but I agree that one's kind of tough to trust him because he has shown that he can blow up. And then how about Matt Latos, who is a guy who struggled this year and then looked like he'd straightened it out, and then people were high on him when he got to L.A., but he has a 6.75 ERA and 3 starts for the Dodgers. He gets the Cubs. Swing and miss, but hit the ball hard, Cubs. What do you think about Matt Latos at home against Chicago?
Yeah, I'm out on Matt Latos until I see the quality starts put together, just because he's someone who, when he's bad, he can be really bad, and he can mm-hmm. really sink your team late in the season. So, and like you say, the Cubs have the potential to really get rolling on a pitcher, so yeah. I'm out on that one.
Yep. I like him as a sleeper for 2016. I think he can bounce back, but right now I'm definitely worried about him so far. Yeah, and then Sunday the 30th, do you like Jared Weaver going to Cleveland at all?
No, AL only, sure, mixed league. Like we were talking about Cody Anderson, he's probably going to strike out very few batters. Mm-hmm. So you're really counting on him to put up low ratios. It may happen, it may not happen. He wasn't great in Detroit earlier this week. Mm-hmm. I'll pass. I get strikeouts from a reliever, so who can get me good ratios.
I've been out on Jared Weaver for sure. I don't like that. How about Charlie Morton getting Colorado? Charlie Morton has a 3.26 ERA and 5 August starts. He's been pretty all right. He's just always been a matchup guy for me when he gets mostly righties. What do you think? He gets the tough Colorado lineup, but he gets him at home in Pittsburgh. Would you consider that?
Yeah, and he has really pronounced career splits for home road, and he's always been pretty good at home. So in deep mixed leagues, I would use him. The Rockies are a really good lineup usually against right-handers, but they're also a lot worse on the road than they are at home. So, mm-hmm. you know, in a 15-team league, I'd use them. In 10 or 12, I think I'll pass.
Yeah, this is kind of an interesting, sneaky one for your deeper formats. I'm very tentatively interested as well. Kind of apprehensive about it, but it has my attention. How about Lance McCullers of the Astros? He had that disaster start way back at the start of August, and he was sent down, and they tried to manage his innings. He came back up. He dueled Kershaw, went 7 innings, 2 earned runs on the 23rd. It was pretty okay, and he was okay before that disaster start. He gets the Twins on Sunday. Are you in on Lance McCullers?
Yeah, for sure. I would use him. I mean, outside of that one disastrous start, he's been really good in his time in the majors. So, yeah. You know, I would go for it. The Twins, not great against right-handers. You know, they've had some decent games lately, but overall they haven't scored a ton since the All-Star break. So, yeah, I would go for it.
Yep, I like Lance McCullers. I'm all in there too, especially righty against the Twins for sure. And then last one, Robbie Ray gets Oakland. I was really big on Robbie Ray. He has cooled off hard, 6.25 ERA in his past 7 starts. Gets Oakland, who doesn't exactly murder lefties. But what do you think about Robbie Ray there?
I'll pass. Yeah, as you said, Oakland isn't great against left-handers, so that on paper it makes it a decent matchup. But Ray just hasn't been good for, you know, four or five starts now. And, you know, we'll see this with some pitchers and some younger guys like Ray late in the season. Maybe they just hit the wall. And maybe he's just kind of hitting the wall right now and just can't get it done. I mean, earlier this week he faced a Cardinals team that also isn't very good against left-handers, and he really struggled against them. So I would want to see him get back on track before I use him.
Yep. Yep, I agree there. He's like a pitcher I like, but there's a lot of warning signs right now late in the season. All right, and then we're going to look at next week real quick, some possible two-pitch guys. If you're in your weekly formats and want to get two starts from a guy. We talked about Kyle Hendricks, kind of boring, but he gets Cincinnati at home and Arizona at home. Do you like those matchups for him?
Not bad. I would use him in 15-team, 12-team. I probably wouldn't. He hasn't pitched great lately either, so in shallower leagues, I would probably pass, but in deeper leagues, you know, and it gets into a little bit categories this time of the season. If you need to chase wins and strikeouts, put him in, because he'll probably get 10 strikeouts next week. If you've got to protect ratios, I think I'm out.
Yep, I agree. How about another guy right around that level of, you know, boring production, but capable? Brent Anderson is at home against the Giants, and then he goes to San Diego. Do you like him in those matchups?
Overall, I do. I would say that as we're recording this podcast, he's pitching against the Reds, and I would want to see the results from that start, because overall, I do like him in those matchups, but he hasn't pitched well this month. Mm-hmm. So I'd love to see him, you know, even six innings, three runs tonight would be nice. Anything better than that, I'm using him. But if he goes four innings, five runs or something tonight, then I think I would probably pass.
Yeah.
Just because, same as the theory with Ray a minute ago, you know, you don't need to jump into some guy's cold stretch late in the season.
Yep. Yeah. He's right on the line for me also. Another guy, again, we're not picking any real obvious ones. These lower level guys could be helpful. You could maybe pick up off the waiver wire. Colby Lewis, who's been also boring but kind of steady, not exciting. He gets San Diego, goes to San Diego, and then he gets the Angels. Does that have your attention at all?
It does, and in fact, I would use Lewis over Anderson or Hendricks next week. Lewis has pitched quite well since the All-Star break, which is great, and that's in some difficult matchups, difficult home park and tough AL matchups. He gets two teams next week in pitcher-friendly parks. He gets two teams that don't really have imposing lineups. The Padres are, as I mentioned earlier, not good against right-handers, and then the Angels haven't played well recently at all, and that'll be a big series for Texas. So I would go with Lewis. Maybe he's just trending the other way from a pitcher like Hendricks right now.
Mm-hmm. And then another guy, maybe my favorite from this list, Joe Ross, showed great control and kind of forced his way into that big Nationals rotation. He goes to St. Louis, the banged up Cardinals, and then he's at home against Atlanta, who's pretty punchless. Do you like Joe Ross next week in those two starts?
Yeah, I would use him. I mean, especially if you own him, this is the time to use him, because the Nats have talked about shutting him down early this season. So you might not have him the last couple of weeks. So, you know, this is a two-start week. He has good ratios this year. I would go for it. The Braves matchup's really nice. The Cardinals is not great, but I'd go for it.
Yeah, he's gonna be okay. I like that okay. Especially, yeah, you're right, the Braves one. All right, and then real quick here at the end of the show, we're going to look at some hitters that might have favorable matchups here going into the next week. Trying to look at some teams that are going good places to either have good hitting parks or good pitching staffs to hit against. So, like, the Arizona Diamondbacks are going to go to Colorado, which is awesome, and then to Wrigley Field. Anybody there in the Arizona lineup that you think could be worth picking up and trying to take a run on here in the next week?
Sure. Even though going to Chicago to play the Cubs isn't a good matchup, I think the Colorado one overrides it. And I believe that's a four-game series with a doubleheader in it. So, I mean, if you're on the fence about David Peralta, if you're on the fence about Ender and Ciarte, I mean, those are players that you probably want to get into your lineup next week.
Slide them in the utility, and they can, you know, take advantage of not only Coors Field, but that Colorado bullpen. There's a lot of guys to hit off of there. How about from that team, the Rockies get the D-backs in town, and they also stay in town against the Giants. Do you like any matchups there?
Sure, I mean, for example, if you're looking for a catcher for next week, Nick Hundley has really noticeable home road splits since he joined the Rockies. So he's someone to get in your lineup next week. You know, if you're probably using DJ LeMahieu in all leagues, but in a shallow league, you know, I'll get questions on Twitter, people comparing DJ LeMahieu to another pretty good second baseman. This is a week that you definitely want to have him in your lineup.
How about Ben Paulson?
Yeah, I mean, you'll have to wait till the rotations totally shake down and make sure there's enough matchups against right-handers to use Paulson. I mean, he should be okay there. If it's a left-hander when it's the Giants, it's Bumgarner, and you're probably happy he's not in the lineup. And but the D-backs do have a couple left-handers with Ray and Corbin, so you'll just want to make sure that he has, say, at least four games, and at that point, you know, you'd want him in your lineup in a deep league.
Yep. And then the Royals will be at home all week. Not a great place to hit, but they get Detroit and they get the White Sox, two teams that don't pitch that well. Do you like some of those matchups for some of those fringy Royals hitters?
Yeah, and although Kauffman Stadium is not a great place to hit home runs, it's not a terrible place to hit in general, to hit for average. And I mean, Detroit right now probably has, maybe outside of Colorado, might have the most attractive pitching staff to put your hitters up against. Mm-hmm. With Sanchez, with Price gone and Sanchez on the DL, I mean, there's like Verlander's pitching better, but there's a lot of really, they're really scraping to try to get, you know, pitchers, Buck Farmer and Matt Boyd, mm-hmm. and their bullpen is really weak right now. So the Royals should be able to feast on that. And then the White Sox pitching staff, other than Sale, pretty inconsistent. So, mm-hmm. you know, Alcides Escobar, if he's kind of fringy for your starting lineup, you might want to have him in there. Mike Moustakas next week, Salvador Perez. You know, in a deep league, maybe you'd give Alex Rios a shot for a week. And I'm thinking now like 15-team or deeper.
Right. Get any of those Royals in there. There's runs to be had is the way I would put it, I say, against Detroit and Chicago. And then finally, last matchup that I think is at least worth attention is the Astros will be at home where they hit better, and they get the Mariners, who, like we said, that bullpen has fallen apart. They have some good starters, but if you can avoid those good starters, there's a lot of guys to pick on. And they get the Twins, who aren't a very intimidating pitching staff either. Any of those borderline Astros guys that you would decide to get in your lineup for this week?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the Astros have hit much better at home than on the road this season. So if you're considering Evan Gattis, for example, who was cold for a lot of August, has now heated up, you know, he's someone that you want to get in your lineup. I get a lot of questions on Twitter about Carlos Gomez and people in shallow leagues, and do they use him or not? You definitely want him mm-hmm. in your lineup.
Gotta
for all
keep
those
him.
Home games next week. Deep leagues, Luis Valbuena, yeah. You know, you probably will want to use him next week and hope that he can hit a home run or two or just drive in some runs. So, I mean, yeah, definitely there's a lot of borderline. Colby Rasmus in deep leagues.
Jake Mariznick.
Jake Mariznick. Get them in your lineup next week.
Yeah, good week for the Astros, who have shown that they are capable of blowing up some pitchers and putting together runs when things are going good, top to bottom. Interesting lineup, for sure. All right, that should do it for us. We didn't get to Twitter questions. One of these weeks, we're going to get to Twitter questions, but you and I have been talking a lot. Fred, you got anything to add before we get out of here?
Yeah, I know we never get to the Twitter questions, but really not a big worry, you know, in the sense of anyone, you know, listening, you can go on Twitter and get their questions answered on Tuesdays, you know, at 3 p.m. So come on from 3 to 4 and put your question in, or just put it in ahead of time. Put it in, you know, Sunday, Monday, early on Tuesday, and then I'll just answer it right off the top before I get to all the questions that are coming in at that time. And, you know, later in the season, we still have a really high volume of questions, but it's a little more manageable now than it was during the first half. So, mm-hmm. guys, you know, if you're thinking keeper league, you know, your keeper questions or late trade deadline type questions, you know, get those questions in. And you know, and you'll get your answer, you know, right direct to you on Tuesdays at Twitter.
Right. And then head over to MLB.com/fantasy, where we have all sorts of content, including the injury report, the closer report, all that stuff, as well as those chat recaps is one of those things we put up. Even if you don't get your question answered or you didn't have a question, you can go read the recap. I learn things from that all the time, questions I didn't consider. And then, you know, reading about it again, the response is going, oh yeah, that is a thing. Or, oh yeah, I should consider that guy. Check those out. Fred's waiver wire articles up there. All of our content, doing stuff every day over there at MLB.com/fantasy. And the quickest way to get a lot of that, follow us on Twitter at Fantasy411. Those chats go on there, and we're always putting out updates. Fred, every day you're sounding the alarm when guys don't make the lineup, which can be really helpful because you go, oh no, I need to go sit that guy if you have him. So, yeah, that's a must-follow over at Fantasy411. Fred, you got anything else for us for this week?
No, that's great. I mean, we got the trade deadline coming up, and a lot of leagues' trade deadline is the end of August. So, you know, don't give up. Get active. Get out there. Make some offers. Start some conversations. You never know how you can improve your roster between now and the 1st of September.
Yep, and the big rule is you don't have to win the trade. You just have to make your team better. You know, you can give up a little value if it's going to help you down the stretch. You're kind of micromanaging stats here down the last month, and some good roto manipulation can help you win a league for sure. Okay, start looking at those stats tables. It gets kind of crazy. But yeah, get the stats you need and figure out where you can chase and make up some points. That should do it for us for this week. We'll be back next week. Good luck with your trades and your teams. And for Fred, I'm Dylan. We'll talk to you then.